Welcome to Packers in Law, where we're playing a drinking game today. We'll take a shot every time we say Mason Crosby. Jake, how does that sound?
Sounds like this episode's going to last about 30 seconds before we're inebriated.
That's probably true. Inebriated, and then another 30 seconds, and we will be passed out. I'm Andy, the Packer noob.
And I'm Jake, the Packer veteran. Andy, you were not here last week. I thought the Packers were going to win. You predicted the Packers to win in the preseason, in this game, of course, we're talking about.
And I would have emphasized it. I would have chosen them to win pregame, too.
Yes, and the Packers did not win this game. Once again, you know, in all three of these games that they have fallen behind in, and the Bears game, obviously, they came back to win. But the common theme between the Bears game...
For a little while, it felt like the Bears game replayed, right?
Yes.
Like, the second half was good, there's some momentum, and then drink.
Right, yep. And another first half hole. I mean, being down 24-0 at half, lots of turnovers, lots of penalties. Just not, again, another slow start, not what we're looking for with the Packers if, you know, they want to win games. But let's talk about one of those, that first turnover. So that punt that
punt
Detroit.
Heard around the world.
That Detroit had. So it goes, it bounces off of either Kevin King or the guy who was blocking him. It was kind of hard to say. And then the Lions jump on it at the one. And then the refs kind of get together and talk about it and decide that it hit the Packers. And so they ruled it Lions ball.
It was weird, too, on the actual broadcast. I don't know, because Jake and I weren't watching this week together. You're in separate locations. It is weird watching the broadcast because, like, neither really the cameramen nor the commentators really took it as a fumble in the moment.
Right.
Like there was no indication. Everyone just thought it was a down, you know, they were just downing the ball or, you know, whatever else had happened. It wasn't until, yeah, after, as you said, the ref, like, had this conference, they were like, fumble, Detroit ball, and everyone was kind of like, what? Like, it's kind of like a tie goes to, you know, the runner kind of thing. You assume, like, a close call, they don't call a big turnover.
Right, well, so here's my problem with what happened in this punt. So, I personally, seeing the replay and rewatching it on Game Pass, I don't think the ball actually hit Kevin King, and they interviewed him after the game. He didn't think so. He said that if he thought it had hit him, he would have turned around and tried to jump on it. Jamon Williams didn't think it hit Kevin King, the guy returning the punt, because I watched on the replay, he doesn't chase after it hit that guy. I think the refs put a big part in this, something my dad and I noticed watching the game. They did not throw, now for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with the rules, if there's a fumble...
He's talking to me.
If there's a fumble, the refs are supposed to have a blue beanbag they're supposed to toss out, indicating that, you know, the ball is loose or it's a live football. And on a play like that, where if, you know, if a punt hits a member of the receiving team and is loose, they're supposed to throw it out there. Nobody did. And so then, you know, the Packers didn't react to it like it was a fumble because the refs did not rule it a fumble or, you know, a loose live ball that anybody could recover. And so when the Lions jumped on it at the one, you know, the Packers thought, okay, well, we have bad field position, but it's still our ball. Then they got together and had their conference and said, no, actually, it went off of Kevin King's back. It's Lions' ball. So to make that, first of all, I don't know who it was that actually saw enough to where that was the case. Because looking at the replay, I mean, again, it was 100% clear, which is why it wasn't overturned. But looking at the replay, I don't know how you can say that definitively bounced off of Kevin King. To me, it looks like, I'm like 90% sure it hit the Lions player's arm. It's like number 45. I don't know what his name was.
Yeah, and what I was trying to get across, I don't know if I communicated well earlier, is like, if none of those refs have like a very clear, like, I saw it hit his hand, the call on the field should be just a downed ball.
Right.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, one of those refs had to be like, no, it hit him for them to make, at least that's what I assume.
Right. Well, that must have been what happened. And the thing is, though, I feel like if you're going to do that in that situation, you have to do that during the play. Because I feel like the Packers had a decent chance to, you know, recover the ball. Or at least, you know, like I said, Tremont Williams, nobody even dived after it because no beanbag was thrown out. They thought, okay, they bounced off a Detroit player. You know, don't touch it. I know there is the rule where if it bounces off the kicking team, you can pick it up. And then if you fumble it, you know, it's kind of like you have a laissez-faire. You can, you know, even if you fumble after that, the kicking team already touched it. So it's okay. But even still, you're on the goal line. You know, you don't want to, like, dive on it. Footballs, you know, they're a weird shape. They can bounce crazy ways. You don't want to give it up in that position. And so...
Correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't watch a lot of replays. Even a lot of the Lions players didn't think much of that, right? Like, it was, like, two or three players that jumped on the ball. But even the Lions sort of just assumed it was a downed ball.
Yeah, they weren't acting like it was a turnover. Now, the fans were making some noise because it was close. And maybe that sort of prompted somebody to think that it was a fumble. But yeah, the Lions really did not think it was a fumble either. Again, it wasn't until the refs conferenced afterwards and said that, oh yeah, it's a fumble. So,
and that was a game-shaping play. Like, that right. was the first, or going to be the first possession. Packers had the defense, played well, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, later. I thought the defense actually had its potentially best game of the season outside of the Bills this week. We can get to that more, but this changed the game completely because they're obviously going to score from the one, and we're off and running, and that mitigates the Packers ever being able to have, well, not completely, but it really hurts the running game because you're just behind, and you know, obviously we're always behind. It forces Aaron to maybe be a little more aggressive than he would be, which we saw, I think, more turnovers than we wanted. It's we cannot say how big that play was in the game because it was so early, it changed everything.
Right, and again, I would say it didn't. The Packers didn't lose the game because of this, but it certainly didn't help anything because now all of a sudden you're in the hole, 7-0 right away when you know probably shouldn't have been. I think again, mm-hmm. if the refs do what they, in my opinion, what they should have done, I think the Packers could get the ball at the one. Now who knows? They're going to be in a safety, blah blah blah. But still, I think the refs, you know, you can't wait around and do it the way they did it. Because, again, if they would have told the Packers that it was a fumble during the play, the Packers might have been able to, you know, salvage that, but they couldn't.
What did you think of the actual challenge itself? Not as much McCarthy calling it, but their decision to let the play stand. I mean, it's hard to take us being huge Packer fans out of this equation, but were you okay with them letting it stand? What are your thoughts on...
Well, I mean, based on, you know, they always say it has to be indisputable, and, you know, when you're not the prime time, you know, main game on Fox that day, because, I mean, Fox had the doubleheader, so the big game was at 3 o'clock, the Eagles and the Vikings. You don't have all the camera angles you normally would, and so with the angles that they had available to them, I think letting the call stand was probably correct. There wasn't anything that definitively showed it didn't touch mm-hmm. Kevin King. So, I mean, I guess I can't disagree with the replay decision, even though watching it, I'm like I said before, I'm 90% sure that it hit the Lions guy's arm and not King at all. So yeah, I guess the replay decision I'm fine with because, again, based on what they had available to them, I think that was probably the correct decision, as much as it pains me to say that. But that wasn't the reason the Packers lost the game. Mostly, again, we said the defense, or like you said, Andy, the defense played. I think they did play well enough to win. They only allowed 274 yards. Now, part of that you could attribute to the turnovers, giving Detroit a shorter field. You know, they didn't have to go so many yards to score. But you know, I think they played well. They had numerous three and outs, especially in the second half. I think they played really well. The big problem here, Andy, was two Rodgers fumbles, which he's only done three times in his career. Last time he did it was in 2015 against the Vikings. Very uncharacteristic for him. There was an offseason he has talked about in the past where that was like his number one goal was to protect, you know, work on ball security, protect the ball, especially when he's getting hit from the blind side, which is basically how both fumbles occurred. Those were huge, especially since the offense really didn't have trouble moving the ball. It was just actually scoring that was the problem.
And, yeah, getting it in the end zone was tough.
Getting in the end zone, and then so even yards. And even getting in field goals, as you know, that as I'm sure for Packer fans, this is the biggest storyline. Mason Crosby, 1-for-5 on the day, missed 4 field goals and an extra point. By far the worst game of his Packers career, and of course he was interviewed, I'm sure, extensively after the game, unfortunately for him. And he said he was thinking back to his high school career, and he's never had a day this bad. You know, before this game, he hadn't missed more than 3 field goals in a game in his NFL career, which is now 11 years, and he missed 4. So that's rough.
It was undeniably psychological.
Right.
Just something, because he's obviously a great kicker. He leads, I think, the Packer organization in points scored. Mm-hmm. You know, we know it's not like a Daniel Carlson situation, even though I think he got a raw deal. But like, you know, Mason Crosby has enough of a resume that we know this isn't him. It was just on that day something really just got to him.
Right, and I mean, you would think it had to be mostly psychological, especially with the fact that they're in a dome. There's no wind.
One was an extra point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's in that distance, there's really no excuse other than his head just wasn't right for some reason.
Right. You know. Yeah. It was just one of those days, I guess you could say, for Mason. So yeah, 4 missed field goals. You know, even so, at halftime the Packers were down 24-0. You know, that game could have been they could have had at least 9 more points at halftime, and I know 9 points isn't a lot, but it's better than 0. You know, that's how it ended up happening, that they went into the halftime, you know, down 24-0 because of all those missed kicks.
As much as I think both Jake and I would agree that, like, Mason Crosby should definitely not be, like, cut or anything like that. And in fact, at this point, we should just really encourage him, because, again, if it's psychologically and we need Mason Crosby to be Mason Crosby. But that said, I don't think we shouldn't completely let him off the hook, because that is massive. You know what I mean? Like, that is, you can't just add it to the box score, as some people have done, and say that he lost the game for us. But in, like, even outside of that, it is so massive, those missed points, that loss of momentum, and it's really indescribable. Because remember, every time he misses a kick, it's a good field position for the the Lions.
Detroit,
as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's massive. I mean, if DeShone Kizer had thrown a pick six, it wouldn't have been as hurtful as what Crosby did yesterday. I mean, inexplainable, really.
Right. And again, it's just so shocking, you know. I think we all kind of thought that after 2012, when, you know, Mason only hit...
The dark times. Before the Empire.
when he only hit, I think, 60% of his kicks and was just in a funk every game, it seemed like. You know, ever since then, he's been very, very good. And to see this happen is just... I mean, it just comes out of nowhere. And it really, it's not what you expect the Packers to fail. You know, not that he's the most accurate kicker in league history, but, you know, you expect him to make... For his career, he's like 80%, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and again, it wasn't like 60-yarders. Like, these are all makeable.
No, yeah, I mean, it was a 41-yarder. I think there was one that was from 56. But then again, Matt Prater, the Lions kicker, also missed a 55-yarder. So, as I said on Twitter, there must have been a strong breeze inside of Ford Field when those were going on. But yeah, just weird. Weird and not at all like Mason Crosby, except for... And then, like I said, it was not... His game on Sunday was worse than anything that happened in his worst year in the league. So, and as he said, his worst day playing football ever in his life. So, just not, you know, I don't think we have to worry about that happening again. At least, I hope not.
No. You only get one of these. If he does it again, he's out. As much as I love Mason, right? I mean, you just can't do it two times.
Yeah, well, and the Packers have already said they're not, you know, they're not going to dangle Carlson him. They're going to stick with him. Because, I mean, they did after 2012, and he was really bad consistently. But, yeah, I mean, if he were to have another game missing 4 field goals and an extra point.
Which he's not. I mean, that's just not going to happen. But if you do that.
Yeah, you might want to start updating your resume if that happens.
At that point, it's, you know, this is in his head. That's 2 games lost. You just can't do it.
Right.
It's just not going to be done.
You just can't. Yeah, but because other than that, I mean, the offense, you know, obviously they didn't, with Crosby missing the kicks, they didn't put up points. But moving the ball. I mean, Rodgers had 400 yards passing, had the second highest passing total of his career. You know, 3 touchdowns, no picks, did have the 2 fumbles. Passing-wise, he played very well. The defense, like we said, I think they played well enough to win. It was just not making the kicks and the 2 fumbles. And also, I just want to really talk about the hurry-up offense. I think the hurry-up offense was not...
It's not up to
not hurried
standards.
Up enough. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like they're still, like, you know, it seems like the hurry-up offense, you should get up there and you should be snapping the ball with like 15 to 10 seconds on the play clock. When the Packers start with the ball in the second half, it seems like, okay, we need to be in the hurry-up offense. We're down by 3 touchdowns and a field goal. And I think the first snap they did that, like they snapped with like 15 seconds to go on the play clock. So it's like, okay, they're serious about hurrying it up. And then like it seemed like the rest of the time, they're snapping the ball with like 2 seconds left on the play clock, 3 seconds. And you're letting all that time go to waste. And... You know, as I was watching with my dad, and he said, they just don't seem like they're serious about actually winning because they could be, you know, I know, and I said, well, maybe it has to do with the fact that there were a lot of rookies playing because, you know, Cobb and Jaramie Allison were both out in this game with injuries. Maybe the receivers, you know, they didn't want to try to rush them because they were afraid more mental mistakes would happen. But even still, you know, I feel like the hurry-up offense has to be more hurry-up in the future, if we unfortunately, you know, let's hope we don't, but if we get into a situation like this again, we have a deep hole. I just, you know, it needs to be more brisk.
On that same level, has Aaron gotten a 12-man on the field call yet this year? I mean, that was his bread and butter the last couple of years.
I think maybe once, but yeah, he hasn't had many of those, and he hasn't had many guys jumping offside free plays, which, I mean, that's what a lot of people know him for.
Which is weird because the offensive line hasn't had a ton of turnover. Now, receivers, of course, that's been sort of a transition year. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like he, like, those guys should be pretty much on the same page. And yeah, that's, I mean, kind of gone away.
They have had some injuries. I mean, Byron Bell has played the last two games at right guard in place of Justin McCray. But I don't think that's enough to throw that off. I know the league also said they were going to be more focused on blowing the whistle if a person jumps offside and is, what they say, unabated to the quarterback. You know, not giving free plays out because they don't want the quarterbacks to take, you know, big shots. But even with that, I feel like he still hasn't done that to the regularity that he used to. And it hasn't been because of that rule. It's just been because, I don't know if teams are finally caught up to his hard count and are more disciplined or what it is. But it definitely hasn't happened as much this year.
So here's something I want to ask you about, Jake, because I don't really know how to explain this. But
okay.
I saw one really, really great, bright, you know, silver lining in this game, but it also has like an equal and opposite dark lining. And that is, the silver lining is, I thought the offensive line seemed to play great. I mean, Aaron had a lot of time, a lot of this game. And as part and parcel with that, I also thought Aaron Rodgers' mobility looked the best it has since week one, obviously before the injury. He looked much more spry, he wasn't limping as much, and he escaped the pocket a lot more than he did. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's sort of where the fumbles came from. But the opposite side of that, that is sort of a sad thing, is despite that, it felt like we weren't able to take advantage of that because of what I would call a poor performance by most of the receiving core. I think, really, it was basically Devontae Adams or bust. Jimmy Graham was disappointing, and the rookies overall were disappointing. Of course, there's you know, this is a broad stroke. Some plays were very good, but overall, I thought that was really disappointing. They just weren't getting open.
Yeah, it reminded me of 2016 before Run the Table started, when it did seem like a lot of times, you know, because I remember we talked about this 2 years ago. In the past, you know, in 2010, 2011, 2012, it seemed like if Rodgers was able to buy time, you just believed he was going to find somebody who got open. And then at the first part of 2016, like when the Packers went to 4-6, you kind of start, like, that was happening, but nobody was getting open. So you kind of started, it got to a point where longtime fans like myself would see that, and we started thinking, oh no, as soon as he got time, he was like, he's not going to find somebody open, he's going to get sacked, or he's going to throw it away. And it seemed like at the end of, you know, during Run the Table, and then, you know, what limited time he had last year, it seemed like that had changed back to what it used to be.
Yeah.
But then,
you got,
yeah,
excited every time that Rodgers escaped the pocket. You're like, oh, this is going for 20-plus,
right,
to Greg Jennings or, you know, whatever, historically.
Right.
Or to Jordy Nelson or something.
Yeah, you thought it was going to be a big play. And I definitely felt that yesterday, that it was like, oh, no, we're going back to 2016 where he buys time and has all day to throw. And there's nobody open. And, yeah, I mean, besides, so, you know, Devontae Adams had a good game. 9 catches for 140 yards and a touchdown. Jimmy Graham actually played pretty well, 6 catches for 76 yards. But yeah, in general, it just seemed like
he missed one big touchdown catch, which was highlighted on the broadcast quite clearly.
That's true, yeah.
Literally went through his hands. And it was a very sort of prototypical Jimmy Graham, you know, kind of throw.
Yeah, like red zone.
Him and Drew Brees did that all day, every day in New Orleans.
Right.
Just using that physicality. It was a great throw, but he, mm-hmm, just, for some reason, didn't have it.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I think we can probably chalk up some of the receivers not getting open is, you know, in terms of when the scramble drill, as they call it, when Rodgers gets outside the pocket, you know, I think Devontae Adams has gotten very good at you know, playing with Rodgers when he does that. But I think the guy who's always been the best at that for the last 5-6 years has been Randall Cobb. Obviously, he did not play in this game. So, obviously, he's the guy who, you know, Rodgers had on the scramble drill to win the game against the Bears.
And his yards after catch is so important.
Yes, that's, yeah, very true. So I think part of it is the rookies, you know, as much as the scramble drill kind of looks easy at times because it seems like, okay, don't do your route, just make it up as you go, you know, that's obviously not a strength of the rookies so far. So that's just going to come, basically that's going to come with getting playing time with Rodgers, which is, you know, it's good they got some on Sunday, but it might have been nice to have at least either Geronimo or Cobb in there, you know, to maybe get open so that, because, I mean, Rodgers threw 52 passes in this game. 20 incompletions. I said, like I said, he still had a great game. You know, 442 yards, 3 touchdowns, 8 yards per pass. But yeah, there were a lot of times where it seemed like guys should have been open and just weren't.
Could we talk about the running game and your take on it? I mean, running game when it was used was very effective in this game. We had 2 runners with over 5 carries that had an average of over 5 yards per carry. That's massive, and especially I think Aaron Jones, he had one series where he was just destroying the Lions. Then it seemed like we never saw him again. And you know, I've seen this elsewhere as well. People are just don't understand why Aaron Jones is not getting more of a run out. I understand Williams is a better blocker, and I do agree with that. So he has a place in this. But it seems like we should really be moving towards Aaron Jones, A, getting at least more touches, and B, being like a pretty consistent featured back.
I would agree with you. I think part of the reason that they went away from the running game is obviously the big deficit.
And that makes sense.
You know, you're down 24-0. You kind of have to. You're kind of forced into passing. I mean, you still run occasionally just to keep the defense honest, but you're kind of forced to pass most of the time. The thing I don't agree with that McCarthy's doing is the where he rotates series with the three backs, where it's like, okay, now this is the Aaron Jones series. Now this is the, and it's not exclusive like that. They do switch in and out occasionally. But it does seem like to start the game, we start with Jamal Williams, then we go to Montgomery, then we bring in Aaron Jones. And I just think, you know, that's all well and good for keeping them fresh, I suppose. But, I mean, Aaron Jones, in the limited opportunities he's gotten, has shown really well. I mean, I've actually been pretty impressed with Jamal Williams, too, especially, like you said, in blitz pickup. But I think they got to get Aaron Jones at least 20 touches a game. If, you know, I guess if the game's closer and they don't fall into a major deficit like they did, you know, in this game. You got to get that guy the rock. I mean, he has been playing very well, and to see him only get 7 carries, again, that was probably, again, going to halftime, you're down 24-0, you kind of have to throw the game plan in the trash and basically go into, you know, salvage mode. But I said this last week on the show, too. I think that guy needs to get more carries, just plain and simple. Get him the ball
more. Yeah, there's no reason that you have to do the sort of, I mean, maybe there is, correct if I'm wrong, but there's no reason to do, like, this series is Montgomery's series. Oh, Montgomery did well, we'll throw him in again. This is the Aaron Jones series. Like, that just seems like a weird way to use your assets. Why not go either by play or by design or by formation? I don't really know the details of that, but it seems like you could use that collective talent better. Because obviously you don't want to get to a point where, like, Williams comes in, everyone knows it's a, you know, it's a pass play because he's in there for his pass blocking. Like, I understand you don't want to do that.
Right.
But there is a point where you can, I guess what you're saying, I'm just saying what you're saying again, more effectively use Aaron Jones and his ability to really break open the game. Because that one series where he did get, I think, 5 carries almost in a row, he really upped the whole offense, and that opened up the field for that little amount of time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it did, and like I said, I just need to give him the ball more. The other big thing about this game, Andy, that I don't think got a whole lot of talk, but the Packers had 12 more penalties in this game. For the season, the Packers had 50 penalties, which is third most in the league, and they always say penalties kind of falls back on the coach, and, you know, not really coaching people. You know, a lot of penalties are pre-snap things. It's not being disciplined. You know, they got a silly that I think it's Tony Brown or Troy Brown, the guy who was pressing the duty because of the injuries, you know, stopped the Lions on third down and then
got stupid.
And got a taunting penalty that kept the Lions on the field. Which I just, man, I see those penalties and my blood boils. I'm like, why? Like, just get off the field. You know, you made a great play. Go celebrate on the sideline. Don't taunt the other team and then undo what you just did.
And that's like a clear, like, that is in black and white in the rule book. If you stand over an opponent, they will call it every time. Just unbelievable. Like, say something to him. You tackle him on the ground, I don't know, insult him or whatever, but don't look down on him in that such a physical black and white way. It's just so clear.
Yeah, well, and even like, you know, even the insulting part of it, if the ref hears you, like, depending on what you say, they can still call you for taunting for saying, you know, something about your mom or whatever they call
you. That happens every play, right?
Well, yeah, that does happen.
I'm just saying they could call you on that, but I would be a little more forgiving on that because, you know, it's part of the sport error, but, like, that clear of, oh, my word.
Yeah, it's real bad. So, speaking about penalties and, you know, not being disciplined and how that kind of falls on the coach, I've seen quite a few articles. In fact, there's an article, Andy, on PackToTheFuture.com, which is, of course, the home of Packers and Law.
Ding, ding, ding. They're great.
We're great.
I guess we're part of them. Sorry. We're great.
We're all great. there's an article on there asking if McCarthy, you know, if his seat's getting warmer, and if he's kind of, you know, like they say, on the hot seat. And, I read this article, and it, you know, I think it makes a lot of really good points. I started to think, man, you know, so kind of looking at the scope of things in the league, it seems like the trend now is to have a really creative, offensive-minded head coach, you know, like the Bears with Matt Nagy, You know, Rams. Guys, the Rams with Sean McVay, even guys like Andy Reid who have been around for a while, but still find a way to get, you know, use the talent that they have available to them.
Oh, the Chiefs look so good. That's another podcast for another time.
Yeah, they look real good. The thing is, so, you know, in the offseason, the Packers brought back offensive coordinator Joe Philbin, who was the offensive coordinator in 2011. You know, they set all those records and had that really unstoppable offense for most of the year. You know, they went 15-1. And, you know, McCarthy in the offseason promised that the offensive playbook would get a makeover. And it says this in the article, Pack to the Future, and I've read it other places as well. The offense looks basically the same. And it's like if McCarthy thought he could just go back to 2011 and it would just magically, you know, we'd turn back into that offense. That's not the case. I mean, that's old stuff. And, you know, the teams have figured it out. And, you know, so basically the question was, is McCarthy kind of getting on the hot seat here? And after reading an article, my thought is, if the Packers don't end up making the playoffs, I mean, at 2-2-1, you know, it's not like they're... Actually, the playoffs started today, which I know is way too early to be talking about that kind of thing. But if they start today, the Packers would not be in. If they don't make the playoffs this season, I kind of wonder if McCarthy might not be on the chopping block. I was curious for your take on that.
I would love that. Listen, I don't hate McCarthy. But the scenario where he is fired or let go or, you know, part on mutual terms, usually when a coach has been here a long time, they'll do something like that. And the Packers are able to hire a new coach with a really unique and proven offensive track record, I think would be incredible. And the cool thing, I think, is that the Packers could literally have the pick of the litter. They could pick any coach they want. I think any coach is going to want to have Aaron Rodgers in that offense and sort of a rising defense for the last years of Aaron Rodgers' career. Mm-hmm. This is a season career. I mean, that is a coaching, especially an offensive coach's gift. Yeah, of course, I'm talking within reason. It's not like Bill Belichick's going to come to Green Bay, but you know what I'm saying. They would have that, and the excitement over that and what that could be, Aaron Rodgers in a new system, is so enticing. And I do think it feels to me like the Packers' offense has gotten a little stale. And that, yeah, maybe his message just isn't reaching the players as much as it once did. And that comes back to what you were talking about, Jake, with penalties. So being more of a problem. So, of course, it's early. Who knows that they, you know, run the table, whatever. But it's definitely worth thinking about. We'll post the article from Pack to the Future on our Twitter page for sure. Right. So you guys can go check that out. Of course, you can just go to the website, packtothefuture.com.
Yes, I'll say it right now. The article is called The Clock is Ticking on Martin McCarthy. It's by Jim... how do you pronounce that?
Widener?
Jim, for pronouncing your last name, I apologize, but we're trying to give you a plug here. But yeah, we'll post it on our Twitter page. But I just thought it was very interesting, and honestly, I agree with most of it, so...
Jim is very German, so Weidner,
there you go. I like that. Stepping aside from that for now, maybe, you know, I think a seat is getting warm, but...
We'll keep an eye on that for sure.
We'll keep an eye on that as the season goes along, but yeah, hopefully we can right the ship here, and hopefully we're not talking about McCarthy getting fired by the end of the year. So, Andy, let's go around and see what everybody else in the NFC North did this week with our very own NFC North Watch.
Woo! NFC North Watch! Woo!
Is Bozo the clown?
I don't know. For some reason, 2 seconds before I knew you were going there, that came into my head to do that.
Oh, so that's great. We'll keep it in there.
Think more. I don't know what that is. But.
All right. Well, to start out, Andy, the Vikings, our best friends in Minnesota, the Vikings, beat the Eagles this week, 23-21. So they are now tied with the Packers at 2-2-1 on the season.
They're such an enigma.
They are really
crushed by the Bills and then beating the Super Bowl defending champions in a very convincing, but a strong performance.
Oh, the Eagles are 1-3 this season. They definitely had some issues, but yeah, they're 2-2-1. They'll play the Cardinals at home next week. The Cardinals just won their first game of the year against San Francisco, who, of course, the Packers are playing. We'll talk about them in a minute here. They, yeah, like you said, they have the best roster, I think, in the NFC North. They haven't shown that. I mean, the Bears are obviously 3-1 and on top of the world right now, at least in the NFC North, so... but they're not going anywhere. They're a good team. They'll be there at the end.
I think nerve-wracking for Vikings fans is that, at least so far this year, they've definitely seemed to play at the level of their opponents.
Mm-hmm.
That goes up and down. So this week they played very well against a good Eagles team, but they also played terribly against a bad Bills team. So if that
right.
continues, that means that's going to be a game versus the Cardinals. So
right, yeah. So moving on to the Bears, they had a bye week this week. And so they stay at 3-1 atop the NFC North, as I mentioned. And they will play at the Dolphins, going down to the oppressive heat of Miami, which I guess should be a little better at this point in the year, but it's still hot down there.
We'll see if that happens. Florida. I think another hurricane's going to hit Florida.
Oh, really? Okay.
So
well,
we'll see if
who
that
knows?
Happens.
Maybe that game gets postponed. And then finally, of course, we talked about what the Lions did. They beat the Packers 31-23. They go to 2-3 on the season, and now they are on a bye, so they get to, you know, rest for 2 weeks.
There's really a log jam in the NFC North at this point.
Yeah, so they get to rest for 2 weeks, you know, thinking about how they kind of dismantled us in the first half. So anyway, Andy, so next week we play San Francisco on Monday Night Football in Green Bay. This is a game where, you know, this kind of turned into a, you know, mid-90s, the Packers, I still remember this very clearly, in 1995, going into San Francisco for the divisional playoffs. They beat them to go to the championship game. And that was back when, you know, Dallas and San Francisco were the two big NFC powers. You know, so that was shocking. And the Packers really kind of owned the 49ers for the rest of the late 90s, early 2000s. And then, you know, once Colin Kaepernick came into the picture, the 49ers kind of turned it around and started owning the Packers over the last couple of years. I think the Packers did win the last game they put against San Francisco back in 2015. But, yeah, obviously, so, you know, but that was in the Jim Harbaugh era. He's obviously at, you know, Michigan now. Colin Kaepernick isn't playing for anybody at the moment. And the 49ers, a lot of hype around them coming into the season with new quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo, who they kind of stole from New England. I mean, they traded for him, but it was, you know, all they gave up was a second-round pick. It seemed like a pretty good deal. And then they won the last six games of the year. You know, he looked pretty good. And then last week, or, yeah, I guess it was, well, not 2 weeks ago, he tore his ACL out for the season. And since that's happened, I mean, it's only been one game, but they do have the fourth best run offense in the league, thanks to, you know, veteran Alfred Morris and a rookie Matt Breida, who has, I think, looked pretty impressive. Their defense is also kind of strange. They're 11th best overall in terms of yards, but they're 29th in points allowed. They allow just over 29 points a game. Obviously, you know, they've won one game, so it's, you know, when you give up more points than you score, Madden talk here, usually you lose.
I was going to bring up Madden, but yeah. You beat me to it.
As far as receiving goes, you know, George Kittle, their tight end, has been a pretty big target. This last game, they actually threw a lot of passes to their fullback, Juszczyk, is how you pronounce that name. It's very weird. And Travis Taylor, another wide receiver who I haven't really heard much about, had seven catches and a touchdown on Sunday. Granted, this is all against the Cardinals, who, you know, do have a good defense. They still have Patrick Peterson. They still have some nice pieces there. But they did lose that game, giving the Cardinals their first win. You know, I know there's another guy who kind of played very well, or not kind of, did play very well with Garoppolo, and that was wide receiver Marquise Goodwin, the former U.S. sprinter. He didn't play in this last game against Arizona. I'm kind of worried if he does play against the Packers, if he's healthy. As we saw on Sunday, the Packers got beat deep by Kenny Galladay quite a bit, and that's pretty much what this guy does, is just run really fast, and he could be trouble for us if he's able to play. I have to say, I haven't been very good with these predictions so far about who's going to be an issue. I mean, I said Cripps Thompson was going to be an issue against Washington. He did nothing. I said Golden Tate was going to be a huge factor in the game on, you know, this last week.
Not
he didn't
really
do much.
Factor.
So who knows? Maybe I'm just negating them by saying they're an issue. Yeah. Or the Packers already know that and take them out of the game plan, and it's other people who beat us,
yeah.
Like Galladay and...
I mean, that very much could be the case that because of sort of lack of depth and experience, you know, the front... The most talented on Packers defense focus on the most talented in the offense, but the secondary talent is not there, and so that's not... I don't mean secondary as in, like, our defensive secondary. I mean, like, the next-level talent on the offense beats our next-level talent on
right
defense.
Right, and so kind of looking at this game, you know, at the beginning of the season, I predicted they would win, and that was with Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, quarterbacking this 49ers team. And obviously, they still have Kyle Shanahan, who, you know, had that great season with Atlanta when they went to the Super Bowl, and then didn't have quite as good a season on offense last year until Garoppolo showed up. Obviously, C.J. Beathard, their backup, is not Garoppolo, but I think he's serviceable. But with Garoppolo out, and especially since the Packers just lost, and I feel like it would be a really major setback to go into your bye at 2-3-1. I think that this is... I mean, obviously, it's not a must-win, but I kind of think it is anyway. I think they got to get back on track. I think they need to start fast in this game, which is something they have not done on the road yet this year, although I guess they're playing at home. But they had three games where they've gotten into major second or halftime deficits and had to try to claw their way out. Only worked once and in miraculous fashion against the Bears. I think they got to start fast and then establish the run game so that they can, you know, keep the 49ers offense off the field. 49ers do have a decent defense. They have length and speed on the line, which I think could give us some problems. Just based on where we are in the season right now, the Packers, I'm predicting them to win. I think they need to win. Like I said, it's not technically a must-win, but I think it kind of is mentally for the Packers right now. Maybe we can have Mason Crosby kick six field goals and make all of them just to get him back on track. But yeah, I think the Packers will win this game. I think it'll be 24-13.
Yeah, I we don't want to use maybe that terminology must-win this early in the season, but it's definitely a season-defining game. If you win, you know, you spin it out. You're 3-2-1. You had a rough start at the beginning. You had an Aaron Rodgers injury, but now you got a week to sort of recoup, and you're definitely right there in the thick of it. You lose, and now you've lost a couple games that you shouldn't have. You're at the bottom or close to the bottom of the division, and it just sort of, it's a slog through bye week. And then remember, as we talked about in our season preview, the back half of the schedule is brutal on the Packers.
Right. So, yeah, one of the points I want to make here is, so the reason why I think it's a must win, because you have the bye week, which is great. Maybe we can get some more guys healthy. Rodgers gets a chance to rest his knee a little bit more. But then again, right after the bye, we go at the Rams, who are, I think, the best team in the league right now. And then we go at the Patriots.
Brutal.
Which is also brutal. Then we get a home against the Dolphins, which we should be able to win that game.
That looks harder than we thought, though.
It does look harder. I mean, the Dolphins are 3-2. I mean, they've lost two games in a row. They started out pretty fast. But I still think that's going to be more of a game than maybe we thought it was. Then you go at the Seahawks on Thursday night, so a short week. You have to go all the way out to the West Coast in a very hard place to play. Granted, the Seahawks aren't what they used to be. And I did predict them to win this game in the preseason. Of course, that was, you know, with 100% healthy Rodgers and all this other stuff. But again, they played the Rams, blow for blow in that game yesterday. So they might be, maybe they still have some toughness in them. Then you go at the Vikings, who I think are a better team than us at right now. And then you play the Cardinals, and then it kind of gets a little bit easier. But yeah, those first four games, especially those first two games after the bye, Rams and Patriots, I think both those teams are top five teams in the league. I think the Rams are the best. I think the Patriots are somewhere up there. So I think knowing that and knowing that those games, I don't want to go ahead and say they're going to lose those games, but
you're not going to win them all. That's for sure.
They're two tough opponents, and so I think you got to, against a team that has this backup quarterback, you're at home. Like I said, Packers have to win this game, I think.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think they will. I don't know if I said that in my last prediction. I think they'll win this game. I do think we'll get it together. I said this a couple weeks ago, again, Packers need to limit those big negative plays. I mean, the punt, obviously, those two fumbles, a couple of big passing plays that were given up. We just have to limit those. And, of course, win the turnover battle, which it seems like we haven't.
Right.
Have we, Buffalo, we definitely won it. Besides that, have we ever won the turnover game?
I don't think so. I think we did against the Vikings, but then that ended up being a tie. And then against Washington, I think we might have tied or won the turnover battle in that game, too.
We'll have to look that up.
Yeah,
that's a tough thing to remember from memory. But
right.
It definitely needs to be something that the defense focuses on. Well, actually, both sides. Defense, take the ball away. Offense,
protect the ball.
Yeah, with the ball.
Yeah, because they did say during the broadcast, during the Lions game, that of all the stats you can look at and say, because of this, this team is good, or because of this, this team is going to win, the one stat you can usually take to the bank is the turnover differential. So, in this case, it was 3-0 in favor of the Lions. It's tough to win when you're giving the other team more chances to score.
Any update on Cobb and Allison? Do we know if they'll be back for this game?
Not that I've heard. I haven't heard anything definitive. I'm sure it's kind of day-to-day for both of them. It would be nice also to get up. We didn't play that game with Jaire Alexander. It would be nice to get him back, although groin injuries seem like they are tricky, and they do take a long time to recover. But yeah, hopefully we can get all those guys back, because again, like I said before, we need to win on Sunday.
I'm going
to
hope that we get one of those two back, which I think will really help the offense as a whole, and so I'm going to say win 31-23.
after one. So the score we lost by on Sunday is we'll win by this week.
I didn't even realize
that. I like it.
It's in my head.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we're right. Hopefully the Packers kind of right the ship a little bit here and go at least go into the bye with some positivity. Well, fans, that's going to be our episode for this week. Of course, like we said before, you can find us on packtothefuture.com.
And read that article about McCarthy. We highly recommend.
Read the article. We'll post on our Twitter feed, but it's also on the website if you just want to go there. There's other podcasts, other articles and stuff. It's all really great. And then it's all a bunch of fans who, you know, are just kind of doing this for fun. So, again, none of us are experts, but, you know, we've watched a lot of football, so we maybe know something. So, yeah, if you're looking for some more opinions. Also, I also want to recommend, I did listen to this yesterday, the podcast Packers Unscripted. It's done by the two staff writers who actually do work for the Packers. I know you might think, well, they work for the team, so they can't really be negative. I mean, yeah, they're not going on there saying, like, man, the Packers suck. But, you know, they do know that the team's not perfect, and I do like what they had to say, especially being in the organization itself. They do a podcast. I think they do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They have an episode of Packers Unscripted. They also do the Insider Inbox, where fans will send in questions, and they answer that they do answer every day. It's either Mike or Wes, the two guys who do it. Kind of interesting to see what the rest of Packer Nation thinks about what's happening in, you know, in the NFL and what's going on with the Packers. So check those out, too. Like we said, hopefully the Packers are going to win, and we will talk to you guys in the next one.
Adios.